The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely that of the podcast contributor and not that of Shine or Sea Change.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Sea Change Sessions with A Little Gale. My name is Abigail McDonald, and this podcast is about all things mental health, how we can normalize the conversation, we can break the stigma, and just be a little bit more open about what we're going through. It's Green Movement Month, and we're so excited. This month has been go, go, go. And we're continuing our conversation about exclusion. And this week, we're kind of focusing on how exclusion actually feels. But today, we have another amazing Sea Change ambassador on with us, Keith Doerr, to talk about his experience and just talked about kind of a lived experience, which is really important when we're talking about mental health. And we at Sea Change find that people can definitely relate to a peer when they're talking about their story. And if this is what it takes to get more people to open up, then I think today is a great opportunity for that as well. But Keith, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Yeah, all good. Thanks for having me here today. It's a pleasure to be here with you. So
thank you so much.
Looking forward to this.
Yeah, we're delighted to have you on. It's a pleasure to meet you. But just to start us off, Keith, would you mind telling us a little bit about how you became a Sea Change ambassador, how you kind of came to this position now?
Yeah, well, I only heard about Sea Change in reality about this time last year. I was involved with raising money for a charity called Suicide or Survive. And there was a bit of a call out over Facebook there last year. One of the guys was looking for 20 people to raise €20,000 by covering 20,000 kilometers last year. So we answered a call and got involved with a group, and we called ourselves 20 for 20. But one of the guys in that group was a Sea Change ambassador already. And he put myself and a few others onto the fact that they were looking for ambassadors this year. So we applied and I was accepted.
Amazing. Fantastic. And 20,000 kilometers, that makes me feel tired even thinking about it. How did that go?
Well, the day has felt it. So I've laid off on the running this year now, but we did plenty of running last year.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Well, fair play. But today we're kind of talking a little bit about exclusion and how that kind of comes around. But Keith, if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about kind of your story and how what your mental health journey kind of looks like.
Looking back now, probably what I realised, my mental health journey started very, very young in life. And when we talk about exclusion, I probably relate more to self-exclusion in that I felt there wasn't any avenue in relation to how I was feeling and talking to someone about it, or even in my family unit, I felt very excluded. So at that kind of crucial age, when you're 15, 16, 17, if, as I did, you go into more of an isolated mindset, you lose those social interactions, and it's a huge part of your life, like, you know. So like, that kind of carried on throughout the rest of my life then, like, you know. But the kind of dichotomy of it was that I looked to careers where there was teamwork involved and where I was looking to help other people as well, like, you know. So we served with the Irish Army through the Guards, and I'm in the emergency services now in the fire service. So I always looked to maybe help other people while still having the mental health issues I had, and, you know, kind of dealing with that, like, you know. Mm-hmm. So it kind of led to maybe in 2017, where I made an attempt on my own life, and then having to deal with that, like, you know. So having to deal with how I actually came to that point in my life, and then maybe dealing with the shame afterwards. And but it's only over the last couple of years now that I've kind of said to myself, and maybe have the resilience to say to myself, well, that's my story and that's what it is. And it's not going to change. So I have this story here, and I would never like anybody else to be ever in that position ever again that I was in. So by maybe sharing a part of my story, it may help others, maybe to realise that what I was feeling wasn't as unique as I thought it was, that there are many, many people out there feeling the same thing, like, you know. So yeah, maybe that's probably where I was coming from, you know.
Yeah, amazing. And thank you so much for sharing that with us. Obviously, it's a very vulnerable time in someone's life experiencing something like that. And I can completely agree when you're saying, I hope no one goes through that. It's a horrible, horrible situation. But as someone who was in the army and kind of fire service, and, you know, growing up, did you feel like that there was kind of a stereotype of being a man and working in these manly kind of, well, I say manly, like the stereotype there, that there was kind of an image to uphold, and mental health wasn't a priority.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely. Like my grandfather was a guardian. He was a big, strong man. He was a man that you'd look up to, like, you know, and and as a child, you know, saying that's the person I want to be, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was always my dream to join the army, and that's the kind of route that I went down, like, you know. But you go into that kind of environment, and especially around the time that it was in the early to mid 90s, you didn't think about mental health, you just got on with it. It wasn't something you thought about, like, you know, and anything you maybe dealt with, you kind of kept to yourself, or was dealt with through black humour or backroom banter or going out for a few drinks, and that's just the norm, you know. Mm-hmm. And that carried on into the guards. I joined the guards. I left the army after about 3 years, joined the guards, and it was the same environment, but then you're dealing with things in your own community as well, and you're maybe going to more things on a regular basis in relation to people, mm-hmm. maybe having the worst day of their life or in tragic circumstances, and dealing with suicides or dealing with death and dealing with, you know, kind of more violent situations, like, you know, and you're just pushing your own mental health to the background while dealing with these things. You just get on, it just becomes the norm then, like, you know. Mm-hmm.
100%. And exclusion can be triggered by these sort of things, you know, having that kind of image, that stereotypical image of what a man should be, being in these roles and being the protector always in that sense, is something that definitely needs to be changed. But when we're talking about exclusion today and how that actually feels, can you share some of the feelings that a person or yourself who's been excluded, how does that feel for you, or how did that feel for you when you kind of self-excluded yourself?
Well, it felt for me as if you were outside the group, even though the reason that, you know, you're involved in football teams or involved in working environments where we're working with other people. Because I knew I had this thing with my own mental health, and mm-hmm. I was probably more introvert, or I put that label on myself that I was introvert more than anything else, like, you know, as maybe a defensive measure to say, well, I don't get involved because I am introvert. So you kind of take yourself away from the group, like, you know. So when you see other people having a bit of banter or having a bit of crack, you feel outside of that all the time, like, you know. And the more you do that, the more you isolate yourself, then maybe other people view you in that way then as well, like, you know, which makes that exclusion a bit more, like, you know.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And we often hear the kind of same experience where people are kind of surrounded by 1,000 people where they work, where they're living, but they still feel very alone. Did you feel that kind of sense when you were saying you kind of tended to go for jobs that were in a teamwork situation or in the football clubs or anything like that?
Yeah, I always did. Like, you know, what I love about playing sport is that you get out there and you forget about your problems. You get out there, and if you're in any way good and you're part of a team on the pitch, it's great. And you feel part of a team, but then you're back in the dressing room and you're not kind of part of that banter anymore, like, you know. It's just, and that's probably just my own personality more than anything else, like, you know. But I think I've come away from that in the last few years, and I just kind of accept myself for who I am now, like, you know. And, you know, some days you might feel good and you might be involved, and other days you might not, like, you know. And I'm sure everybody is like that, you know. Whereas, you know, sometimes I would have been sitting down at, say, a table in the fire station, everybody else is having their dinner there, like, you know. It was always like, it was them and then me on my own, like, you know, rather me feeling as part of that, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was around maybe just I felt that I wasn't dealing with my mental health issues properly. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there was a time there, say around 2014 up to 2014, where I was being medicated and I was diagnosed with anxiety and PTSD. But that was kept totally away from work altogether, like, you know, because I felt that if I mentioned it in any way, I would be excluded from any sort of, say, promotional processes or training courses, or even sometimes just, oh, hey, that's the guy that has those issues, like, you know, and you feel more excluded then, like, you know.
Yeah, 100%. And I appreciate you bringing that up, because with PTSD, there are so many people in the forces in Ireland, for sure, who experience it, you know, and it's definitely something that should be talked about more in the workplace, because it's such a normal thing that happens. But did you kind of find sometimes that your own, well, this happens with me for sure, my own anxieties would get in my way of opening that door to different friendships and different conversations and things like that? I would overthink it so much that I'd actually be the one in the way stopping me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and then the other person that maybe that you could all have that conversation with is feels that bit of tension that you've put into the situation because you feel awkward, like, you know, and then they feel awkward, and then all of a sudden that conversation doesn't go anywhere or that relationship doesn't kind of grow as it should or whatever, like, you know. So I find it very hard to make connections with people, like, you know, just because of that. And it's more because of my own anxiety around, oh, what do we say, or how awkward you feel in the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the exact same 100%. There's one thing that I hate, and it's small talk, because I'm in my head for the majority of the conversation and I'm thinking, okay, if they answer like this, I'll answer like that. And if they answer like this, I'll answer like that. And yeah, you're too in your head to be engaged in it. And it's really difficult to actually have an authentic conversation when you're so anxious about it. But when we're talking about exclusion, we know it can have such a negative impact on a person's mental health. Can you give an example of the impact exclusion had on you, or how it kind of came as a consequence to how you were feeling?
Over the last couple of days now, when I was thinking about coming onto the podcast here, and I knew it was coming up, I was thinking a lot about exclusion and how it has affected me. And I kind of come to it that it's self-exclusion, and I've taken responsibility for that myself, like, you know. Mm-hmm. But how it makes you feel is that I'd feel that when, say, something was coming up, and say a wedding that I'd been invited to, or even a night out or whatever, like, you know, I'd often would have cancelled those things at the very, very last minute because of my own kind of anxiety around being in a social situation. And I, the more that I did that, the less I was asked out to certain things. And all of a sudden, I'd imagine that it was a case of, well, there's no point asking him because he doesn't come out anymore, like, you know. So I felt a lot of shame around that in relation to letting people down, in relation to not being able to actually develop any sort of relationships with people, or making friends as I should have, maybe, like, you know. But it's more about letting other people down, like, you know, because I probably have that thing in me that I'm a bit of a people pleaser and would have put other people first before me. So if it's in your mindset to put other people first before yourself, and then all of a sudden you're letting them down, you know, you haven't gone out to the situation or the social setting that you've been asked out to. So you're sitting at home and just feeling really, really crap about yourself and feeling like, oh, this is me, you know, I'm the one that lets people down. And it just kind of, your self-talk is really debilitating at that stage then, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And did you find kind of an inner conflict of half of you saying, I know I want to go out because I know it will be fun and I know I'll enjoy myself, but the other half of you is like, I can't take it. I need the relief of just saying no and leaving it.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, you know, I'm sure we've all had those situations where, look, you don't want to leave the house because it's nice and comfortable, like, you know, but if you stay in that small comfort zone that you have and you never make an effort then, like, you know, then you're not living a full life as you should. Like, you know, it's like that thing of the first time you jump into the water, like, you know, you might be have a bit of trepidation there, like, you know, but you make that leap and you jump in and it's just a bit of fun, like, you know. Mm-hmm. But I always found that I couldn't make that step across into the water when it came to social situations. And then the other side of it was that when I was younger, I maybe used alcohol to make that step, and then you kind of developed an awful lot of self-destructive habits that would have hurt other people as well, like, you know. And there's a lot of shame around that as well, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I've seen a lot of people and even myself thinking, oh, I'll have a few drinks and I'll be more fun, or I'll be more talkative and open to conversations than I am now because I'm overthinking things. Yeah. And while it's great to have a good night out, it can be really damaging in the way that you think that about yourself, that you can only be acceptable after a couple of drinks, or, you know, it's really, really tricky to kind of combat that. But when we're talking about language, is something we talk about with Sea Change a lot, especially when it comes to stigma, exclusion, all those sort of topics. Do you think, Keith, that language currently being used in society plays a part in someone feeling excluded?
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, it might not be said to somebody directly, or it could be said about someone who has a mental health issue, but they're in the company of somebody who's talking about somebody else. Oh, that person's mad, or that's the crazy guy, or, you know, the stigma set onto them then, like, you know, because if somebody hears that sort of language being talked about, it makes it much, much harder for them to open up. And then obviously it pushes that exclusion zone between them and other people. But again, like, you know, language is a huge thing. So it's language that we use to in our daily lives, you know, that sort of way, like, you know. And if we could use a better tone around our language, even, like, you know, or a better set of words in relation to how we deal with things, or just being more empathetic towards people generally, whether they have mental health issues or not, and have better understanding, then I think it'd be much, much better for everybody, you know.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been in that awkward situation where someone, you know, a colleague or a friend or a neighbor is using that kind of derogatory language, and you're in the situation where you think, do I say something or do I just leave it awkwardly hanging, or should I bring it up because I know it's wrong, but I don't know how to face it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like the jobs I've worked in, like, you know, the language wouldn't be too PC.
Yeah.
You know, and as I mentioned, you'd have that kind of black humor, and that black humor actually serves as a tool as well to help people, you know, get through. And that's just the way we talk about things, like, you know. But I have been in situations where, say, a group has been talking about, say, one of our colleagues that maybe it's just known that they have made an attempt on their own life, like, you know, and it's kind of around, you know, how can we ever work with that guy again? Because that fella just wants to kill himself, like, you know. So how can I work with someone who wants to do that to themselves, like, you know? And in the background, I'm kind of there, well, that was me only a few years ago, you know, that sort of way. And I can't define another person by a moment that they had in their life. And I hope I'd never be defined in that way either, like, you know, and even around the locality here, like, you know, certain people that walk around town, and, like, you know, and, well, that's the mad guy, you know. And it's really like, well, what has got him to that situation in his life that people are pointing at him, and he's totally excluded away from society altogether, like, you know. I think I've been in situations like that many, many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely very difficult, and I've been in those situations before. A lot of the time I do build up the courage and say, actually, maybe let's not say that, maybe let's move on to something else. But a lot of the time I'm still in that awkward, not wanting to be seen as forceful or assertive, and saying, actually, no, I'm just leaving it. It is really difficult in those conversations.
But I found that even over the last year, where I've been involved with the Samaritans, doing training with the Samaritans as well, like, you know, and even being involved with Sea Change and Suicide or Survive, I've been more open to conversations with other people, like, you know. And I found that I'm probably more able now to say, well, maybe let's not use that word, maybe there's something going on that let's not judge what is going on in that person's life, like, you know. So I have found that I am more open over the last while to saying, you know, to stepping up, maybe, you know.
Definitely. And have you found that you've had to kind of change your vocabulary or the phrases that you use kind of from when you were younger till now, in terms of kind of it's stigmatizing words?
Oh yeah, well, not even too much younger, maybe even over a few years ago, like,
yeah,
you know.
Definitely.
You know, because we deal with an awful lot of mental health in the profession that we're in relation to patients that we deal with as well, like, you know. And it's fairly easy when you're going through a kind of crisis yourself, like, you know, that you're going into work and you see it as a job, and this is just another person, you just want to get to the hospital. It's very easy to kind of to judge and to, you know, just to kind of put them on the conveyor belt and get them out of your way, like, you know, without actually kind of understanding what's going on with them, like, you know. But I remember one situation there when it was a guard years ago, where I arrested a guy for he thrown petrol over a lady up in a mental health clinic, and he was arrested, and she wasn't injured in any way. He was obviously going through an awful lot himself, but he wrote me a letter from prison then when he was convicted, and I still have that letter to this day, like, you know. And I remember at the time that I just couldn't understand what he was going through or the language that he was talking about. Like, it was a plea to help to me, really, you know. And I was just a young guy thinking, what is he going on about? Like, you know, he's this and he's that, like, you know. But I can really understand it now. And I've reread that letter many, many times over the last couple of years since I've gone through what I've gone through myself, like, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of talking about the forces and things like that, how important is it for people working as guards or in the fire service or in the army to know how to deal with people who might have a mental health difficulty, or know how to talk to people like that?
Yeah, no, it's really, really important, you know, because you might be the one that can actually help them in some way, like, you know. And sometimes it's not a matter that you have to say or do things. Maybe it's just a case of just listening, you know. And I think that may be not an issue, but maybe just something in relation to people that work in the emergency services and the army and the guards and the fire service and the ambulance services, that in general, we're there to help people. So we're fixers. So we have it in our head that we want to fix things. Whereas that person maybe just doesn't want to be fixed. They don't really know you, like, you know, maybe they just want to be listened to. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's a case of just allowing that space for someone to tell you what they're going through. Mm-hmm. You may not be able to help them that particular day, like, you know, in relation to what's going to happen to them long term, but you've let them talk for a few minutes, you know.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think it's so important, especially when it comes to dealing with someone who's in a situation that's quite vulnerable. You know, you never know how your actions are going to affect someone. So I would really love to see kind of more emphasis on that for sure. But what are some of the things that people can do in general to be more inclusive? From your experience, Keith, what kind of helps you?
To get involved, in things. And as I said earlier on, like, you know, that I maybe found it hard to get to make that step, like, you know, but it's maybe to trust that other people, you know, aren't as bad as you maybe think they are, you know? Or maybe that, you know, it's not going to be as bad as you think it's going to be when you open up your mouth or you go to join a club. But I really believe that we all have that resilience within ourselves, like, you know, and if the conversation around mental health is more open, people will feel kind of more relaxed, more open, and you know, they'll live the life that they want to live. Like, you know, for me, it might be to play football. For another person, it might be just to get out and meet their friends and have a chat with them, whatever, like, you know. But we'll get out there and be involved and make those connections with other people, like, you know.
Definitely. And do you think workplaces still have a way to go in terms of being more inclusive? Or what would you like to see in kind of workplaces?
Maybe that is just, it's not something that we have to ever talk about, mental health in relation to. We now have to talk about mental health. It's just part of our conversation. It's part of our health, you know, the sort of way. The same as, say, if I came into work one day and said, geez, I'm going to have to hurt me back or whatever, I could come in and say, you know, I had a bad day there yesterday, like, you know, and it's affecting me this way, like, you know, and the other person or the other people are there saying, you know, well, yeah, well, that's okay, like, you know, I don't want to talk about it. Or, you know, they just give you the space to talk about it, like, you know, that it's not a big thing. That we find these days that the conversation around mental health, that it's this big thing that maybe people are still afraid of. Whereas in reality, people who, the likes of Sea Change and ourselves here, we just want to make it as normal as talking about anything.
Yeah, because it is normal. It's so normal, you know. And I try and be as open as possible, just as casual as possible about it as well, being like, oh, I had a really bad day, or yesterday I had a panic attack. And have it in casual conversation, because people do listen. You know, people do listen when they hear conversations like that and think, okay, well, if she's talking about it, maybe I can too. And it only takes kind of one person in a workplace or a group or a club to start that open conversation to influence, because people do listen, especially when it's something that may have kind of affected them. But kind of what supports and services would you like to kind of signpost our listeners to? Because you were mentioning Samaritans there. Is there anyone else that you would kind of like to mention in terms of the work that they do?
Well, the Samaritans, obviously, I've just finished training with them, and just in relation to my own work schedule at the moment, I'm finding it hard to actually get to the next mentoring process. So I'm not actually physically volunteering with them at the moment, but what they do and the training that I received there, I really do believe the people that are there just to listen and to, you know, to hear your story, and then they can signpost you to maybe different places in relation to what is going on in your own life as well. But say, you know, talk to your family, talk to your friends, you know, the likes of Pieta House, the likes of Suicide or Survive, whatever's in your own locality. You know, if you really, really need to, go to your GP and let them know exactly what's going on, like, you know.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Keith, what changes would you like to see in the next kind of 5 years when it comes to the conversation surrounding mental health?
Just that we can actually have the conversation, you know, that it's an everyday thing, it's an everyday occurrence, and it's seen as normal as anything else, that, you know, that we don't have that unique thing that we need to hide away from everybody else. You know, we all have mental health. Everybody has their own environments that they've grown up in. Everybody has their own environments that they live in now. And they all have their own dreams for the future. And believe as well that your own mental health is, you know, it's yours. It's, you know, deal with it in relation to the tools that you've developed. There's other tools that are out there in relation to learning that you can do. There's other people there that have had lived experiences as well, like, you know, that you can learn from them. Ask questions if you need to ask questions. Get help. You know, just see it as part of your, as your health.
Yeah.
Not just your mental health, you know?
Definitely, 100%. It's a full circle, physical health and mental health. And even the fact that we have to kind of divide it is ridiculous, you know? It should be seen as a full thing. But for my podcast, I always like to end with a message of hope, because talking about mental health can be quite draining for a lot of people, you know? I know myself, telling my story can be quite draining sometimes. I'm sure you feel the same at times when you're kind of reliving all these sort of things. So I think it's really positive to and important to end with a positive message to remind everyone that hope is always, always there. But Keith, what message of hope would you like to give our listeners today?
Yeah, I just off the cuff, I'd like to say that I really didn't think I'd be here today talking about this. Like, you know, I thought that my life would have ended in 2017. I'm here, I'm grateful for every day that I'm here. But believe that you have that resilience within yourself, and that there are other people there that will help you when you open up. And just do believe that the next day will be better, you know.
Keith, well, we're so happy you're still here, and we're so happy that you're Sea Change Ambassador, and thank you so much for talking to me today. For those listening out there, if you've been affected by anything we've talked about, we're going to link all the services and supports down below, if you want to check out anything about that. As it's Green Ribbon Month, if you want to find out more about Sea Change, please go to seachange.ie. You can find out where you can get your free green ribbon in Boots, some Irish rail stations, AIB air stores. We've got green ribbon all over the place, and they're free, so why not wear one? Start a conversation. It doesn't have to be too serious. It can be casually, how are you doing today, but really mean it and really listen. Keith, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate our conversation, and for those listening, we're going to be back next week with another amazing episode with more amazing guests. So thank you for everyone listening, and stay hopeful. Yeah, let's end on that. Thanks, guys.